it's, you know, the predominant feminist literature on gender and technology has always highlighted the double-edged character of ICT, in the sense that it is potentially liberating to some women, and on the one hand, and on the other hand, reproduces social inequalities in the digital form. Or now, scholars have also expressed their anxiety over the ubiquity and high expectations of society, especially young people and women, over the information society. Among feminist scholars, the analysis of the technology with gender as a priority has often been a general gloom view, and some of the views include technology being represented as a reinforcement of the master-slave relationship of men and women. Back home in the Philippines, for example, we have outstripped India as the BPO capital of the world. Researchers on Philippine BPO show that it is both a boon and a bane for working women because they earn at least 3 times the minimum wage, yet they come under the biopolitical control of the BPO software, making them extensions of the computer in its efficient extraction of human labor for capitalist profit. I also want to talk about the current phenomenon in the Philippines called the Jejemon. Jejemon are allegedly a class of young people, knowable mainly by the way they spell, or rather misspell, words in text messages and in blog sites. In truth, the term Jejemon is a creation of upper-class youth who are irritated to receive texts or Facebook friend requests from lower-class youth who are upset by the fact that the wide open space of the web allows these citizens of the slums to enter into their upper-class libraries and bedrooms. Yet we talk about the capacity of the IT society to break up boundaries and even identities. In truth, I'm also not blind to these opportunities, nor do I wish to dismiss the roles of ITs in the uprisings in the Middle East and North Africa, hyped as some of it has been. Friend of ours, Versola, notes that the internet has indeed produced an abundance of information and knowledge. He goes further to note that this abundance and what he calls the generative logic, quote unquote, of the commons it produces contradicts all the assumptions of liberalism and capitalism about the limited nature of resources and competition. In other words, in the internet, you give out your ideas, you get more ideas in return. I would go further and say that the web puts to question the very identity of rational man, and I use the term man, that underpins neoclassical economic theory. But both the research project and today's agenda asks me to speak about issues of governance and democratic processes. Like Hart and Negri, I have been intrigued by the nexus between the spontaneous creativity of the mass, something glimpsed in the uprisings in Middle East and North Africa, and the fascist, rigid, bureaucratic processes of representational democracy that is true of all governments. It would seem that the in-between that is made obvious by the openness and spontaneity of the new systems of communication is what we are problematizing. In my waking dreams, I wonder whether the spontaneity of creation and resistance need not be ossified always by government systems and power systems that only create misshapen consumerism as phantoms of real desire, love, and solidarity. In an attempt to posit desire as primordially social rather than individual, Guattari postulates a theory of collectivity and subjectivity that explains the persistence of fascism. His theory is of interest to feminists because of his attempt to integrate desire into political theory. Of particular relevance to the issue of governance and fascism is his theory of groups, and it may guide us somewhat in looking at the liberational identity politics that we are also looking at when we talk of resistance and governance. Guattari makes a distinction between the subjected group and the group subject. The subjected group defines itself as a reaction to other groups and is therefore determined by these others, while the group subject seeks to define its own internal dynamics as it interacts with other groups. The subjected group enforces traditional concepts, roles, power structures, and struggles against reformulations of desire. And such a group forms fantasies around a permanent object, such as an internal god, thus granting itself a sense of immortality. The group subject, on the other hand, and I hope this is where feminist groups belong, opens itself up to redefinitions and new modes of interaction. The group subject still forms fantasies, but around transient objects that are transcended by actions that open up new boundaries, new fantasies, and therefore new definitions of desire and identity. Guattari extends this analysis by pointing out that group phenomena such as racism, regionalism, nationalism are examples of subjected group processes. Further, he sees the capitalist state as a repressive mechanism that prevents the emergence of group subject processes that threaten capitalism. On the other hand, Guattari's analysis of subject processes validates the advocacy by feminists that women must be allowed to assert the multiplicity of their identities, something Anita talked about this morning on the internet, and their right to seek changes in the norms that define those identities. The political deployment of fluid and open constructions is, for me, I've written a paper about it, it's not merely one that protects against violations and abuse. It is also a long-term strategy for achieving goals of a revitalized social movement. Problematizing, therefore, the nexus between spontaneity and solidarity, the ground systems of coordination, and that's where I think governance begins, and the need to establish group identities that do not underpin capitalism and fascism, I ask myself of the Philippine project we are now engaged in and the projects like those of Sri Lanka on this panel, what exactly we wish to achieve when we deal with our failed democratic institutions. As many of you might have guessed, I believe that liberal democracy is in as much crisis as capitalism, and it isn't just in the third world. It is also why I must confess that the citizenship part of the research eludes me. Citizen exactly of what, I wonder. Is that nexus between individual spontaneity and solidarity citizenship? Or is it, as feminist scholars all over, including, well, bell hooks, suggest, is the nexus love rather than citizenship? Mere IT access is a first step towards change, but it is also clear that women themselves have chosen to use the internet to advocate for change despite its problems. The action research we're working in attempts to challenge this in several ways, challenge liberal democracy and its failures, among other things. First, it confronts issues of the digital divide by working with women and men from poor communities and backgrounds. The participants are organized members of the community. In the conduct of the project, the processes used rely only on gender-empowering techniques of organizing already put in place by community organizers that are the partners of research. For example, trainings and press work sessions are held on weekends and Sundays. Transportation costs are provided. Time management allows for plenty of informality because women must be given the space, even during weekends, to attend to their ever-emerging reproductive tasks before they can leave their homes. While this is a burden on the more privileged members of the research team and can lead to inefficiency, it is nonetheless an important organizing standard that signals to women and men that their reproductive work is as important as their public productive work. The articles written are paid for. This also signals to the participants that work done for the general community, traditionally considered women's work and therefore underpaid and voluntary, is valued. While a group of community activists were given training, anyone can submit an article, and every accepted article is paid for. Because of this attempt to ensure that the micro program that we're working that increases economic resources does not become a form of breaking down community, trained participants are encouraged to share their skills. Naturally, the recruited participants understand the issues involved as well in the need to pass the reproductive health bill. In short, the link between the IT and the political empowerment agenda in which the tool is embedded is organic in this research. The project, in insisting on bringing community realities in the form of online news publishing, also challenges existing paradigms that tend to emphasize news about powerful politicians, which is considered hard news, or other forms of hard news such as wars, famine, economic booms or bust, and the concerns of the upper class. Social welfare issues such as health get very little coverage in mainstream media. Even as such, the issues, when they are covered, the slant is often sensationalist and adversarial, leading to the obfuscation of the measured arguments that reflect the social conditions of the marginalized. Surveys have shown that even the more dispossessed socioeconomic classes watch news, but generally the programs are noontime shows of gimmicks and songs and dances, or soap operas that merely replicate class, race, and gender biases. Consciousness of the issue and how it relates to both practical and strategic needs is not a static quantity either in the form of the research in the research team's mind. Access to IT technology as a means both to investigate and broadcast community realities and opinions should deepen the participants' own understandings and hopefully continue the project of empowerment within community organizations. Because the news articles will be focused around efforts to influence elected representatives into passing the bill, it is also a study in the active citizenship of the participants themselves. There is a dovetailing of efforts. The writing participants are also activists who also march to Congress, sit in the galleries during deliberations, and help conduct information campaigns in the community. It will be interesting to note how the added dimension of writing about their thoughts and feelings around these issues may clarify their own ideas of their relationship to the elected representatives. Discussions of the featured articles also revolve around other issues of state and citizenship. The religious arguments of the Roman Catholic Church implicates willy-nilly the question of secularism and religious freedom. The research may well argue that the cycle of action-reflection theorizing action inherent in the creation of an online article may help further in sharpening the activists and adding to their empowerment within a project that is about calling the state to account to its human rights commitments. Regardless, the 12-year advocacy for the bill makes it the most widely discussed and debated piece of proposed social policy that has come from the feminist movement in the Philippines. The struggle has engaged large numbers of community women and continues to do so. The small group of activists, the research team members, the readers of the online articles are themselves part of this outcome. Team members can be key informants about how this exercise of citizenship rights has been ongoing for more than a decade and whether it has been affected or not by IT. The research, however, needs to reflect on the interaction of micro and macro structures. The internet allows the local and the intimate to be brought into the national and macro level in this project. Project control allows processes and procedures to be self-determining, but only at the micro level. There is no real assurance that the social structures that impinge on the micro environment of the project and the movement of which it is a part will change. I doubt it will. It would be foolish to imagine that the project itself might in any way be able to change the discourses it seeks to interrogate through its integration into a larger movement, though its integration into a larger movement allows it to contribute a little more significantly. Some of the literature on IT suggests further that IT has deleterious effects. It imposes its own linearity and logic that slices the real lives of community women, their struggles for justice, their desires and passions, and their endless creativity. Furthermore, providing training and access to a small group of activists cannot overcome, even for them, the larger issues of equity and access. The internet itself is still dominated by the English language, multinational business interests, and consumerist, heterosexist cultural norms. The predominance of English, for example, easily exacerbates the colonial legacy of a government and elite that is unintelligible to the rest of our people. A small group, no matter how tied to a nationwide social movement, cannot change the current architecture of the web nor its norms. There is no assurance that community action and the larger social movement can win the passage of the bill. Thus, the research project also needs to consider the disencouraging and disempowering effects of the confrontation with the hegemonic power structure on the community activists and the research team. For all its attempts at engendering equity, providing better access to a small group, this brings inevitably a separation with possible threats to solidarity. The research project must take a discursive view of the lines of agency and victimization, resistances and takeovers, predictable and unpredictable results. However, it is the hypothesis of the research that the confrontation will at least open up considerations of the discursive interpenetration of gender, IT, and citizenship. The challenge will allow researchers and participants alike to interrogate the congruences and perhaps find incongruences that can be open for destabilization and resistances. Thank you.